Bitnote again, we play video game music and talk about the games they're from. Hope you enjoy. Hey everybody. So, before I start the show off, I think I'm just going to go on to a bit of a self-congratulatory note. You see, I always like the video game music I play, but it's not just about me liking it and telling everybody that I like it. I also tell you that it's good music, because I believe that I should be authoritative in this section, and I believe that you should all, the more people that agree with me, the greater my ego becomes, and the more that I feel self-entitled to my own opinions. The reason I bring this up is because a while back I played a very, very, very good music track from Turrican 2, composed by Chris Husbeck. I played the full 6 or 7 minutes long. It was a nice long track. I played the full version, partially because I remember that time that the audio cut off a full version of American Pie, and I did not want to repeat that sort of stuff with you guys, but also because I thought the track was brilliantly damn good, and I want you to listen to the whole thing because I think it's a good track. Well, It wasn't just my subtle opinion, although you should have listened to the track and known that it was good yourselves, because it turns out that my liking of the Turrican soundtrack and the workings of Chris Husbeck has been validated. Chris Husbeck. Apologies. So, essentially, Chris Husbeck, of course, was responsible for composing a lot of the Turrican soundtrack, and I'm a little late to the party with this, but about a few months ago, he wanted to create a full special edition 3CD remastered soundtrack anthology to the Turrican music. So, and he didn't want to just make this, like a decent effort or just do a thing. He wanted like an entire full orchestra. He wanted to go the whole hog. He wanted to make the greatest composition of great music, brilliant anthology of Turrican ever. There was just one slight problem. Quality, especially when you're hiring out an entire orchestra who generally don't like being working for free, usually requires money. And it would require a lot of money. And while the idea of capitalism works on the basis that, you pay money now and hope that, enough money will be made off of it in the future that'll justify paying money now, Chris wasn't just that sure about whether, there'd be a demand there. I mean, there's a difference between a whole lot of people on various parts of the internet and est forum saying, yeah, this soundtrack sounds awesome. They should totally be a remastered version. There's a difference between that and actually them paying lots and lots of money for it. And don't get me wrong, all these internet petitions and message boards and fan support are all very good indications. But there's a difference between saying you like something and actually paying money for it most of the time. So, Chris did something that a lot of people are doing these days. He started a crowdfunding project, specifically a Kickstarter project, where he said, I need $75,000 in order to make this thing happen. And he wasn't hedging his bets or anything. He knew that this is what he needed. Now, the way Kickstarter works, which has basically started a lot of crowdfunding, is that people pledge money to the project. And there's usually, the campaign usually lasts something like 30 days or 60 days or whatever. But essentially, the project starts up, people look at it, and they pledge money. This basically puts a hold on their personal finances that says, they can't spend this money just for the moment, but it gets added to a given total. So people pledge money, and their rewards for various incentives. For instance, on the Turrican project, if they just pledged $5, they just got a thank you. If they pledged, and one track from the album, but if they pledged like $25, they would be able to actually have download access to all the tracks, and then at higher amounts they could actually get the physical CDs. And this goes all the way up to 30,000 or really high editions, where you get to where Chris would actually compose a full piece of music for you and stuff. So essentially that's pretty much, and a whole lot of other rewards as well. So that's pretty much it. People pledge money, they're given rewards, but they don't spend a single cent, and they don't get charged anything until it actually reaches its target. So throughout the campaign, obviously people pledge money, the total goes up, but if it doesn't reach its target, then the whole thing just gets cancelled and everyone goes back to square one. Well, Chris Husbeck set a target of $75,000, and in the end, it raised a total of $175,534. So that's like $100,000 more than he asked for. There were a lot of people out there who really, really wanted this anthology. this soundtrack, this music. And thankfully, because of the support and combined efforts of people all around the world, we're going to get it. Or at least those people who play it get it. And it's just, I actually don't know what the copyright would be if I decide to play a track or two from that on this thing, but I'm sure something will work out. But the point is, it just goes to show, for a start, video game soundtracks are serious. There's a lot of people who really love this stuff. They're fans, even though the fact of the matter is that, you know, Turrican games haven't been made in like 20 years, literally. I mean, well, maybe something in, maybe a little less, but over 20 years, people still remember the tracks, people still love the tracks, and people still are willing to pay to make those tracks live on and have new versions and support the people who created those great tracks in the first place. Of course, that's what I've started has really only been the beginning of the Kickstarter story. A lot of it's not just game soundtracks, countless games and other projects have been involved, but that's another story and I'm leaving that aside for now. But the fact of the matter is, it just goes to show just how much people love a lot of these love these video game music. So I've just talked on and on without actually giving you any good music right now. Let me just drop you. Why don't I just drop a great big relaxing piece of music on you and we'll go from there. Thank you. And there we have a nice, relaxing, classic bit of video game music from Simon the Sorcerer, developed by Adventuresoft. That's the forest theme. And apparently the music in this game was created by Media Sorcery. Well, Simon the Sorcerer is a great series of games. Very tongue-in-cheek. I played it on the PC. Essentially, it's the whole setup is that you're a regular teenager, and you're apparently your dog, who basically you never really felt much compassion towards, suddenly discovers an ancient book of magic in the attic. It opens a portal to another world. You accidentally slip through, and suddenly you find out that, whoa, now you're a sorcerer, and for some reason everyone expects you to defeat this great evil wizard. Well, such is how things go. The game, as you can see, doesn't really take itself that seriously. There's a bit of parodying going around. You basically meet all these sort of characters. You start off by being told by a wizard about the evil person you have to defeat, and you're kind of like skeptical and snarky about it. But you pretty much don't have a choice, so you sort of get out there and start looking around this great big area, trying to figure out who this guy is, what the heck you're meant to do. And starting off, you've got this great big open plain of forests and trees and even some icy areas and stuff. And you can talk to barkeepers who, you know, when you talk about, you know, when you say to the barkeep that, you know, you're from an alternate dimension, he just replies, well, we have all sorts around here. What happens whenever you pick up various different items, you click pick up on the button and you click on the twigs or items and you'll pick them up. And if you try to click pick up and then pick up on and click on a person, Simon will just say, I prefer blondes. So it's just, and there's just a whole lot of like talking dialogue, fun little adventures and like nice little puzzles you have to figure out through. It's classic point and click adventure game. You've got luscious, you know, rendered pixel art and just beautiful environments, nice animation. I mean, I think a lot of people got really addicted to that pixelated art style back then. They even tried to recreate it now. I can think of Swords and Sorcery, a recent game a recent indie game that was released about a year or two ago that for the iPad and other platforms that, you know, sort of tried to do something similar with that whole evoking the pixel art, brilliantly luscious locations back then. But with Simon and the Sorcerer, it wasn't an aesthetic choice. They basically had to use that sort of, they were working with technical limitations, so the pixelized art was basically what they had to work with, and they just made it beautiful. Bright colors, beautiful music like that, and a lot of great locations as well. It's classic in the sense that sometimes the puzzles can be a bit tricky. I mean, unlike a lot of point-and-click adventure games, you're not given a heck of a lot of direction at the beginning. You're not given a clear objective. So you do what you had to do in a lot of games back then. You just keep exploring, doing whatever you do in any given area. And you always assume that if there's a task that needs to be done in a given area, I mean, like if someone's having trouble crossing a bridge, if someone's sled is broken down, if someone's complaining about they've lost their mum, you always know, or you always at least assume, is that by fixing this tiny, minor, inconsequential problem will always be vital in order to actually bring you to the ending of the game and the final showdown with the main boss. It's just how it always works. Even if you have no clue how reuniting this little kid with his mother is going to actually help you defeat an ancient evil, it always turns out to be a vital stepping stone in order to do it. And so that's why you go around, you talk to everyone, you get hints, and you figure that any progress is good progress, and normally it works. I mean, Simon the Sorcerer ends up, like, you end up having to find some bits of a ends up having to grab a metal detector and end up having to find, dig, and then you end up tricking this archaeologist into digging in that area so you get the metal and everything. And if you notice that this seems a little out of place for a fantasy setting that has, you know, wizards and dragons and swamp creatures, well, you're kind of right. The game does tend to be a bit anachronistic in that sense, but it's kind of what adds the humor as well. The game was beautiful. It's a great example of point-and-click adventure game. Tricky enough puzzles. It had a sequel which fixed a lot of the little problems and brought the series in a different direction. Unfortunately, the sequel after that, well, I'll just talk about that later. But for now, it was a beautiful game, and I think I'll wrap up talking about the game with what I think is a great piece of, with its theme tune, which I think is a great piece of music. So, Simon the Sorcerer by Adventuresoft, early 90s, classic, fun adventure game, great sense of exploration. And if you want to play it these days, just you'll probably have to, you can buy it online on a website called goodoldgames.com. That's GOG.com. And it doesn't matter what sort of computer you have. You can get a Scum VM, which is an open source program that allows you to play these classic point and click adventure games. It was originally designed for LucasArts games, but it supports Simon the Sorcerer. In fact, I think that's what GOG.com uses for playing the games as well. So I'll leave you with the Simon the Sorcerer classic theme, and we'll move on to the next game. So, classic theme from Simon the Sorcerer. I'm going to move on now to another game series that actually has a surprisingly amount in common with Simon the Sorcerer, even though you mightn't think of it at first. They're both our classic game series. They both took place around the same time. And they both had a good game, a sequel that some may say was better than the first game. And then they had a 3D game. It's something that a couple of game series did around then. It was kind of a trend to go 3D and call your actual game title, you know, like Simon Sorcerer 1, Simon Sorcerer 2, and then Simon Sorcerer 3D. And normally this game sucked, and that's pretty much what happened, both this series and the next series, which I'm about to play from, Earthworm Jim. We'll be right back. And that was from the Redbook audio of Earthworm Jim, a classic track, New Junk City, it was called. And obviously, like I said, in the consoles, it may have sounded a little different. But once you go into the PC, higher quality. So they just made higher quality audio. Earthworm Jim is a classic franchise. It actually had a really cool animated TV series, which I watched a lot as a kid and enjoyed. But the actual game series was developed by Shiny Entertainment. It Shiny Entertainment was set up by David Perry. He did a lot of various works. And then essentially he was approached by a company that was wanted to cash in on the success of Sonic the Hedgehog and do something like that. And had Doug Tennapel create an initial sketch of Earthworm Jim, bring it to David Perry, and they decided to make a whole series of it. So Earthworm Jim's a lot of fun. It's got a lot. You're basically an Earthworm Jim, a little earthworm in a super suit, and you go around blasting a machine gun, and everything is like a huge parody. For instance, it's got a level set in hell that's got like lawyers attacking you and stuff, and you're trying to rescue Princess What's Her Name. I mean, the game just didn't take itself very seriously. I mean, in the first level of the game, there's a cow in your way, so you have to get it out of your way. So you basically shoot this fridge that falls on the log that catapults the sky into the air, and in various levels you can still see that cow flying through the sky. How the cow eventually returns to Earth happens at the end in a scene that pretty much every episode of the cartoon series parodied. The game had a pretty absurdist sense of humor because, after all, you're an earthworm in a super suit and defeated your enemies by both whipping your own body against them and also by shooting them. And it's been remade a few times for various platforms, but obviously it was just a lot of fun, pretty hectic, and it was just... And of course, the animated TV series actually was fairly faithful to the game, a little goofier, but a lot of the things like Bob the Killer Goldfish and Queen Slug for a Butt and all this sort of stuff were still there. So it was a good series, and it was a lot of fun. And of course, Peter Puppy was cute and everything, and all the different levels and lots of variety. And so it was just a very good game. So I'll leave now with the ending theme for Earthworm Jim. Great music as well. So this has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening, and game on.